Some clear skies and a narrow window to get some seed in the ground has opened up. But that window is going to slam shut later today and tonight when storms, once again, roll across the Midwest.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we'll visit with Mike Steenhoek from the U.S. Soy Transportation Coalition. Then it's Darren Hudson from Texas Tech. And in the final segment, from Gilliland and McKinney International Counselors, John Gilliland. And the ladies are lined up to see Mike Opperman from Farm Journal's Milk today. I'm handsome info Ferrari Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
You are the info Ferrari.
Oh, yeah. Grabbing gears, baby. Grabbing gears.
Wow. All right. Welcome to AgriTalk, everybody. It is another day when we are caught in a news cycle that is continuously changing.
Yeah.
Because now it appears that Lou He, and I assume that you're going to cover this in the news, but it appears that Lou He is headed to the U.S.
Yeah. Word is they're going to send a couple of guys over on Wednesday and then, you know, Lou He to follow on Thursday. Well, I've got a little bit on it in the news here.
It's all coming together then, huh? So we're going to get this deal done?
Yeah,
is that why beans are 4 cents higher?
It's got to be. It's got to be.
Wow.
Somebody knows something we don't if that's the case.
And lean hogs were limit down early this morning. They've gotten back more than half. More than half. The D's contract has even turned higher.
I see that. There's green on the screen.
Yep. Yeah.
Bizarre.
And please don't say this too loudly.
Okay.
But cattle are trading higher right now for the first time in 12. Well, no.
Wow.
They traded higher yesterday, too, and ended up lower. So,
Yeah, let's
don't
not
spread the word. Keep it quiet. Live cattle are trying to avoid a 12th consecutive lower close.
Downside stampede. You got to watch that.
It is.
You'll spook
it
them.
Is, very much so. And, of course, we've got the weather forecast out there that is calling for storms to redevelop tonight here in our area, Davis.
Yeah.
They are already starting to blow up in areas of the Midwest. And this active pattern that Michael Clark from BAMWX talked about yesterday on the show is going to continue. Those that were taking some of the rain out of the forecast yesterday morning have put it back in now.
So over the next
48 hours or so, here in eastern Iowa, we could see up to 3 inches of rain in some areas.
What? 3 inches?
Yeah. Do you not pay attention to the forecast?
I can't stand to anymore.
I get it. Storms right now are back in central Kansas, southeast Kansas. There are some developing storms in western South Dakota, and those storms that have been blowing through the panhandle of Texas, they're starting to blow up again today.
They've been nasty down there this year.
Gosh. Yes.
Quite the deal.
And some storms are developing in East Texas right now as well. So eye to the sky once again, because there are some bad intended storms out there. Okay, let's get to the news. What's going on?
Hey, let's talk about something completely different. You ready? Acting U.S. Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan has approved sending a carrier strike group along with bombers to the Middle East. That's in response to intelligence reports of a credible threat by Iranian regime forces. According to a Reuters report, the Abraham Lincoln carrier strike group is being positioned to send a message to Iran. Defense Department officials believe Iran presents a threat to U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria, saying the move, quote, represents a prudent repositioning of assets. And Chip, quickly important to point out, the Abraham Lincoln group was set to go there. They've just expedited their move over into the area.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got the last question that I want to get to with Jim Gilliland in the final segment today is about Iran. Is it going to turn into something much more serious than what it is right now?
Yep. Well, and as you said, talks between U.S. and Chinese negotiators are back on for this week. As sources report, Chinese Vice Premier Liu He will join a delegation traveling to the U.S. That's for talks on Thursday and Friday of this week. But as negotiations continue, concerns are growing that Chinese President Xi Jinping will take a hard line on concessions. An editorial in China's People's Daily said, quote, "When things are unfavorable to us, no matter how you ask, we will not take any step back. Do not even think about it," end quote. Meanwhile, China is reportedly preparing its own list of increased retaliatory tariffs, Chip, get this, that would take effect 1 minute after the United States imposes its threatened increased tariffs. Now, Chinese President Xi Jinping is thought to be concerned that offering concessions at this point to U.S. negotiators would make him appear weak, and sources say it is important to Xi to save face in light of the ongoing trade conflict. That's just pride right there, isn't it, Chip?
Well, and it's something that we've been talking about for the last 10 months. We've got both leaders are in a save face and look strong mode, and that hasn't changed in 10 months. But, yeah, we get down here to the final stages, and that's when it becomes really critical.
Mexico and Canada have said ratification of the USMCA trade accord is in jeopardy if the United States does not include removal of steel and aluminum tariffs at signing. President Trump has indicated his preference to maintain the metals tariffs as leveraging tools. Now, Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa has reportedly pleaded with the president to change his stance on the Section 232 tariffs to no avail. And in a somewhat related note, the U.S. Commerce Department will decide today to bring an end to the U.S.-Mexico tomato agreement, where Florida produce growers believe their Mexican counterparts have been selling produce below fair market value, putting U.S. growers at an unreasonable disadvantage. Chip?
Yeah, that agreement, I think it goes all the way back to 2013.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
And I remember when that was negotiated, that was a big deal. Mm-hmm. That was a big deal because it set the way the produce markets were going to compete against each other. So
absolutely,
it is an important move there as well. All right, thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Mike Opperman, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. How you doing today, Mike?
Hey, Chip. Good. How are you?
Doing just fine. Just fine. Hey, the Chinese tariffs. It's a developing market for dairy. What kind of impact is it having on our dairy exports?
Well, the situation in China is kind of a two-headed monster. First, you have the tariffs, but then, by the way, you have African swine fever as well.
Yeah.
So the tariffs, you know, that makes U.S. products more expensive, and the tariffs also impact the Chinese economy. So the end result is they're looking for cheaper product elsewhere. So our market share certainly has dropped. They bought a lot of product from New Zealand. So imports from New Zealand, Australia have gone up into China. So that hurts us from a U.S. standpoint. Now, China isn't a huge importer of U.S. product, especially when you look at Canada, Mexico, Southeast Asia.
Sure.
But it still is significant. The potential certainly is there. So it's having an issue, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the ASF is having an impact on feed demand, which includes some dairy products.
Right. So fewer pigs, fewer piglets, less lactose products going into piglet feed, so that has an impact. Also saw a report from Rabobank that they expect beef demand to go up because there's fewer pork, so may have more dairy cow culling, so that'll have an impact as well. So it's a like I said, it's a two-headed monster.
It is. Mike, thanks. We'll talk to you later.
You bet.
That is Mike Opperman, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. All right. Stay tuned, everybody. We got Mike Steenhoek, Soy Transportation Coalition, up next on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarafly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Get control of flies on your dairy operation with the first and proven leader in feed-through fly control, Clarafly Larvicide. Reducing fly populations by over 96%, Clarafly Larvicide controls four fly species and does not affect dung beetles. It comes in a uniform premix, so you can trust Clarafly Larvicide is mixed right the first time. With Clarafly Larvicide, you get consistent control that saves you money by using only what you need. Learn more about the industry-leading Clarafly Larvicide at centralflycontrol.com.
The mighty Prosaro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield. the hammer of head and leaf diseases, the number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quantity and higher yield, use Prosaro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosaro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
We're joined today by Joan Ruskamp, past chairman of the Cattlemen's Beef Board, to talk about what your dollar does to promote demand for beef. Joan, what's new with the beef checkoff?
Thanks for having me on. According to our most recent producer survey, 80% of producers today say the checkoff drives demand for beef. So I'd like to share some of the ways we're doing that. One example is foreign marketing. We're exporting about $8 billion worth of beef overseas. That's huge, especially considering how we've opened up markets in Asia, creating value for producers around $320 per head slaughtered. Additionally, the checkoff has helped boost retail meat case sales to a six-year high, with strong demand expected to continue through 2019. We also launched a campaign to showcase real ways the checkoff is using producer dollars to drive demand. It's called Your Dollar Does. You can learn more and sign up for the newsletter at drivingdemandforbeef.com.
That's great, Joan. Thanks for joining us from the Cattlemen's Beef Board. To learn more, go to drivingdemandforbeef.com, funded by the Beef Checkoff.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarmer.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
I don't know what you're thinking, so call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Chip Flory. That is Davis Michelson.
Miaha.
And the importance of that Chinese market, and we're going to talk with Darren Hudson about it here in just a little bit, too, but the importance of that Chinese market. And Mike Opperman just gave us an example of how deep how many tentacles it has, how mm-hmm. deep it reaches into U.S. agriculture.
Sure.
When we start talking about, you know, lower hog, fewer hog numbers resulting in lower feed demand, taking demand out for U.S. produced whey because it's a feed ingredient, it is absolutely amazing how the ripple effects of this China issue continues to turn into waves.
And let's not forget also the other tentacles that are involved in this diplomatic kind of thing here. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got China out there in the South China Sea making a ruckus.
Right.
And I didn't report on it. I almost threw it into the news. But, they're building a whole other enormous aircraft carrier over in China. That's according to satellite photos. China's something that's going to have to be dealt with. And we got to figure out a way to work with them or get some kind of resolution going or live with them, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
They got all kinds of stuff going on over there.
They certainly do. Certainly do. And one of the things that we need to do is get product out of this country and headed to China.
That would be great.
And one of the guys that's heading up and brainstorming on what should be done is Mike Steenhook with the Soy Transportation Coalition. He joins us right now. Mike, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys doing?
Doing just fine. So last week, there was a meeting between, I believe Schumer was in there, but Pelosi was in there for sure, President Trump, and they came out and they were all smiling. And the world may have stopped turning for a moment because they had what both sides said was a productive meeting, and it was about infrastructure, wasn't it?
And that's it kind of is an indictment on our times that, you know, when you have, you know, a group of lawmakers from one side of the aisle and the president from the other side of the aisle, and they actually have an agenda item on the table that's actually important to the American people, and then they emerge from the meeting actually more committed to the issue than when they entered the meeting. That should be routine, but yes, unfortunately, in the current political climate that we're in, with kind of just political grenades and just one big political food fight that's often that happens, it actually is rare, and so it is encouraging to see that for at least a period of time they actually, you know, did take a time out from some of the acrimony and actually had a productive discussion. Now, this is most certainly not the time to pop the champagne.
Right.
We don't have a transportation bill, and the way I like to describe it is, so we're not at the finishing line, but in order to eventually get to the finish line, you have to first cross the starting line.
Yeah.
And so that's how it should be regarded. We have crossed the starting line. It's incumbent upon all of us to make sure that we are encouraging our elected officials to keep this a priority, eventually getting us to the finish line.
Yeah, Mike, here's the problem that I was very encouraged that the talks took place, that like you said, there was more agreement that something needs to be done, and maybe there was even some discussion about what should be done and how it should be done. So I was encouraged by all of that, and then I hear the price tag that they put on it, $2 trillion, and I think to myself, $2 trillion, that isn't even real life. How do you come to a figure of $2 trillion? But you got to kind of back off from a little bit and just understand that it's a big project that we're talking about.
Yeah, it's a real big number, and just to put that into context, the Highway Trust Fund, so there is a federal tax on every gallon of diesel fuel and every gallon of gasoline, and it goes into the National Highway Trust Fund. That generates roughly $35 billion a year. So all of these Americans filling up their tanks with diesel fuel or gasoline, that tax, the federal tax, generates about $35 billion a year. We're talking about $2 trillion a year. So, I mean, obviously it's a big number. What I keep focusing on is, and maybe it's kind of my cheapskate Dutch heritage coming out, but really just kind of focusing on, okay, let's really define the need. I don't get too caught up on, well, let's make it $1 trillion, let's make it $2 trillion.
Right.
It starts sounding like a New Year's resolution where you're like, I'm going to lose 10 pounds, or I'm going to lose 20 pounds, I'm going to learn Spanish, I'm going to learn to play the piano. I mean, all these kind of things. And so really kind of focusing on, let's define the need. That's making sure that we're taking into account all the modes of transportation. What's the dollar figure associated with that need? And then let's kind of work from that. So I guess, you know, on one hand, I'm encouraged that they're looking at investing significantly. I don't get so hung up on the $2 trillion number. I think it ultimately needs to be more, let's provide sufficient funding on the various modes. And then let's, obviously, where the rubber meets the road has been and always will be, how do you pay for it? And that's right, where, you know, if this is going to move from an intention where it is right now to eventually an outcome, you're going to have to answer that question.
Yeah, and I think people have to understand also is that the term infrastructure has been broadened. We think about it as bridges, roads, rivers, rail, the stuff that's important to farmers doing business out there. And now they're putting broadband into the conversation. That has become part of the infrastructure narrative, hasn't it?
It has, you know, and it can easily bring to things like water treatment and utilities and all of these things. And, you know, it's kind of the system upon which the U.S. economy rests. And that includes roads and bridges, that includes, you know, broadband and all of these telecommunications and all of these things. And so I'm fine with that discussion broadening. Obviously, the price tag expands when you do that. But anyway, you know, the reality is, you know, I've said this before, the U.S. has increasingly become a spending nation, not an investing nation. And so it's not a surprise that you're seeing degraded rural bridges. You see antiquated utilities, power grid. I mean, you're seeing it really expressed in that spending mentality versus the investing mentality. Yeah. We see it evident in a lot of areas.
Yes, very much, very much. The other thing is, it's a constant battle with Mother Nature, whether it be flooding taking out some bridges or this, you know, the moisture that we had last fall combined with the winter weather that we had this winter. You get to the spring thaw and gravel roads in the state of Iowa just melted away on us, Mike. It's got to be one of those issues that needs to be addressed going forward.
Certainly, there's not a whole lot you can do about Mother Nature when she decides to rear her head and impose herself, but you can make sure you've got an infrastructure that is not, it's not going to be impervious to it, but you can make it more resilient to it. And that's something that when you're making this kind of planning, you have to ask yourself that question: how can we make this more resilient? How can we increase redundancy so that if you have a breakdown in one mode of transportation or one avenue, it may result in a inconvenience, a detour, but it doesn't shut your whole supply chain down.
Right. Okay. Got about a minute and a half, and I wanted to get to this, Mike. What is the current status of the Mississippi? I mean, I don't know how to solve the issue. I mean, Mother Nature has to take care of it and solve it for us, right?
Yeah, it's more like the Mississippi Ocean right now than the Mississippi River. I mean, the river is shut down, and it's going to be, it's not just a matter of days. This is going to be a matter of weeks, and it's a real concern. Obviously, it has an impact on our ability to move product outbound. It really has made it much less efficient and, frankly, shut down the ability of accessing fertilizer via the barge system. So this has really compounded the whole issue of fertilizer accessibility for farmers. It's really having a real detrimental impact on our supply chain right now.
Yeah, no question about it. And okay, we're out of time, Mike. Doggone it, I could talk to you for an hour. Mike, it's good to talk with you again, and we'll stay in touch. Okay.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You bet. That is Mike Steenhook with the Soy Transportation Coalition. Davis,
yeah.
It's the fertilizer coming up the river, but it's getting that grain away from the Midwest. We've got so much grain that needs to move.
Yep.
We talk about it on the second hour, basis and the impact on prices and so on. But the potential impact on corn basis, on bean basis, from that Mississippi River being shut down is tremendous.
It's a two-way street, and we need both sides running right now, real bad.
That is correct. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk with Darren Hudson, ag economist from Texas Tech University, right here on AgriTalk.
We're joined today by Joan Ruskamp, past chairman of the Cattlemen's Beef Board, to talk about what your dollar does to promote demand for beef. Joan, what's new with the Beef Checkoff?
Thanks for having me on. According to our most recent producer survey, 80% of producers today say the checkoff drives demand for beef. So I'd like to share some of the ways we're doing that. One example is foreign marketing. We're exporting about $8 billion worth of beef overseas. That's huge, especially considering how we've opened up markets in Asia, creating value for producers around $320 per head slaughtered. Additionally, the checkoff has helped boost retail meat case sales to a six-year high, with strong demand expected to continue through 2019. We also launched a campaign to showcase real ways the checkoff is using producer dollars to drive demand. It's called Your Dollar Does. You can learn more and sign up for the newsletter at drivingdemandforbeef.com.
That's great, Joan. Thanks for joining us from the Cattlemen's Beef Board. To learn more, go to drivingdemandforbeef.com, funded by the Beef Checkoff.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, a little bit of strength in corn and soybeans, but compared to the pressure that we saw yesterday, it's not much.
Yeah, more of a moral victory, I think, here today so far this morning with just 1 to 2 cent gains in many of the contracts and very modest in compared to what we lost yesterday in the market. So hopeful that we'll get more price strength. The reality is probably not going to see a whole lot more than this.
Yeah, and wheat. I guess wheat has started to come back a little bit from the early morning losses there, hasn't it?
It a little bit. You know, we're seeing the spring wheat market lead us. I think some of that is tied to the planting or lack thereof. Yep. In those key states and running significantly behind. Similar to the corn market there with the planting delays. But it's not a huge market factor yet, obviously, based on the price action.
Yeah, based on the price action. I think it is for everybody that's got a planter sitting in the shed. It's a big deal, but the market.
Definitely. There's a divide between the market and the farmer right now, the divide is wide.
Absolutely. Okay, I don't want to speak too much of this, but we do have higher live cattle prices right now.
Yeah, that's the star market so far this morning. Nice bounce back there in both live cattle and feeder cattle. And feeders are leading us up with strong gains. But that market's taken it on the chin recently. So we do need some corrective buying there.
Yeah, we've got mostly lower lean hog prices, but they have worked their way up off the session lows. All right. Thank you, Brian. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous 1 month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for, only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Okay, yeah, now we've talked about some of the infrastructure issues now with Mike Steenhoek from Soy Transportation Coalition, Davis, and obviously making sure that the product can get out of the country is one of the solutions to help turn this ag economy around. I want to visit with Darren Hudson. Now, Darren is an ag economist at Texas Tech University and the director of the International Center for Agricultural Competitiveness. He joins us right now. Darren, how are you today?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Doing all right. All right. So what's taking up your think time these days, Darren?
Well, you alluded to infrastructure issues. I think those are pretty important, thinking about long-term investment. But in the short run, in the very short run, we're talking about weather, and in the intermediate term, we're talking about trade. Those are sort of the two things that dominate our time these days.
Yeah, you guys down south, my gosh, it seems like it's just been one storm pass after another down there.
It has, and it's today is supposed to be another round of severe thunderstorms. So, right now there's not for us in the high plains. There's not a lot in the ground, so this is good pre-plant moisture. For those further south of us in central Texas, hail damage, can take its toll pretty quick.
Yeah, exactly. How is the cotton planting going down there?
Well, they just, here in the High Plains, they basically started in the last week and a half, and they're going to halt it, I think, for a few days, mainly rain, but we've got some cool temperatures coming in, low 40s kind of temps. So that's not really good for disease on the seedling. So I think for the most part, they'll halt it for a couple of days and then hit it back again this weekend.
Gotcha. What about that hard red winter wheat crop down there. I mean, when the tour went through Kansas, they came out of there with some of the best results we've ever seen. Is it as good down in the panhandle as it is a little further north?
I think so. You know, the ones that are, you know, thinking about carrying it to grain, definitely the rain has really helped fill that grain out. And I think, you know, some of the farmers I've talked to said they potentially could have some of the best wheat they've ever had. And, you know, of course, a lot of it's going to be grazed down, you know, or used for hay or something. But for the most part, those that are going to grain, I think, are really happy with what Mother Nature has provided this year.
Right, right. And talking of grazing it down here real quick, Darren, my gosh, this cattle market, 11 days down. Now, we're working on some slightly higher prices this morning, but it's just become so hard to take this relentless selling in the cattle market, hasn't it?
It is. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, there was some fundamental weakness, I think, but nothing, you know, what people expected to see, you know, this long of a route. I mean, this is a pretty, you know, it's getting to the point of what they call serious, you know, and I think that there's a lot of people that, you know, weren't anticipating this, but, you know, I think all of the commodities, not just cattle. I mean, if you look at where the hedge funds are, I mean, record short positions everywhere. I mean, it's just, you know, the money is betting and pushing, you know, prices down. And I think it's, you know, like I said, there's some fundamentals to support it, but certainly not, you know, a 12-day route. This is really not what anybody anticipated, I think. Right. And it is worrisome for the long term.
Yeah, I agree. And when you look at the long-term situation for the protein markets, Darren, you've got to take into consideration African swine fever in China, Asia, Europe. I mean, it's one of these events that hopefully is once-in-a-lifetime event, but it's threatening to change trade flows around the world.
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about China alone having to supply its pork supply, you know, in the short run from imports, that just disrupts the entire global supply chain. I mean, it's unprecedented the level that, you know, this swine fever is having. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how we're going to work our way out of it, but it's not going to be, you know, in the next 2 months. I mean, we're in this one for the long haul. And like you said, you hope this is a once in a lifetime kind of deal, because it's serious ramifications all over the world. And, you know, we're just keeping our fingers crossed and, you know, praying to the good Lord above. We don't see it here. I mean, that's we do everything we can to avoid it.
Right. It is something that the thing that bothers me about ASF, Darren, is that I think the industry has just kind of given into the idea that, well, you know what? We're going to do what we can to keep it out of the United States. We're going to do what we can to keep it out of North America. But inevitably, it's probably going to show up here, too. I disagree.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know why, you know, from a biosecurity standpoint, I don't know why you take that attitude. I mean, it's just it's a dangerous attitude to take. It's, once it gets here, I mean, you know, it becomes a prolific problem and then you can't manage it. And so, you know, it's best to try the best you can. And even if it ends up here, you've prolonged it, you've delayed its entry as long as possible, but you don't just throw up your hands and say, we'll handle it when it gets here.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It is troubling to hear some of the attitudes. Okay. General ag economy here. I want to ask you, what's the fix? The fix is better commodity prices. I get that. But as the price goes down, boy, Darren, the talk of supply side management just gets louder and louder. What's your thoughts there?
Well, you know, we've been down that road before. It's a nightmare. I mean, you know, the reality here is we need solid trade agreements. We need them. We need to get them in place. We need to get them working, because it allows farmers to do what farmers do, which is respond to good prices. Change, make decisions based on, you know, functioning markets. And we've demonstrated, you know, over the last 15 years that when faced with even adverse price conditions, producers are pretty flexible. But if you're going to go on this persistent long-term, you know, trade war, it just undermines the agricultural complex in a way that is damaging for years to come. And, you know, no amount of supply side management or any of that other stuff is going to fix that problem. Right. That just doesn't fix it. And it doesn't fix the underlying problem when you have those things of the structural changes that you know, in land prices, in input prices and things like that. Those need to adjust as well. And we just can't do it when we're in an environment, you know, we've sort of ag has stepped up to the plate and said, you know, we'll take it on the chin here in the short run to try to, you know, snap China into line, yep, behaving properly. But, you know, there's no light at the end of this tunnel. So it's becoming very difficult to think about planning one year, 2 years out. And banks are getting skittish. Everybody's getting skittish, you know. So we really just need trade agreements. We need good, solid trade agreements. Get these things going, and let the American farmer do what the American farmer does, which is produce food safely and cheaply.
Mr. Hudson, Davis Michelson here, sidekick extraordinaire.
Yeah.
Just a quick question on that. There's been a little talk out of Washington. I know Sonny Perdue is very hopeful that in the event of a trade agreement being signed with China, that there would be an immediate impact and a noticeable effect to farmers right away. Do you share that opinion?
You know, you're going to get a bump. There's no doubt, as especially hedge funds and everybody else sort of adjust their portfolios, you know, based on those long-term expectations. Mm-hmm. But what's got to happen is actual sales. That helps out the you know, the Wall Street and Chicago types, but it doesn't help out the farmer if you don't sell soybeans. You know, what we want to see, I think, is in any kind of trade agreement, immediacy of shipments, you know, of beans and corn and cotton and, you know, the other commodities. We're going to get a bump. I think, you know, beans get probably the biggest bump if we see immediacy in shipments, because they're the ones that have basically taken it on the chin the hardest, in terms of the trade restrictions. But it's not going to be a panacea to solve the problem over the next 4 months, but it certainly will improve the outlook as you start planning later on, because we know that those things are going to get drawn down. Those things are going to move out in a more timely fashion.
Hmm. Yeah. It's not rocket science, is it? Let's get some of these agreements in place. Wrap up China first. Let's get that done and move on to Japan. Get USMCA ratified. Move on to Europe. Let's get these things done.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, the astounding thing, and this has nothing to do with any, you know, the current administration, the astounding thing is we don't have a free trade agreement with the European Union. I mean, it just blows you away that you don't have, after all this time, we don't have a good trade agreement with the European Union. But yeah, absolutely. We need to clip these things off. You know, the Trump administration is rattled about the idea of reentering the TPP.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of the day, the funny thing is that the TPP isn't a huge boon for ag, but it does isolate China economically.
Exactly.
And so if you're trying to strategically maneuver into a world where, you know, you've boxed the Chinese in, you need the TPP. But we've got
absolutely
to move on these things because they've got to, we've got to move ag product out.
That's right. Got to move that product out. Darren, thank you so much for the time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Chip. I appreciate it.
You bet. That is Darren Hudson, ag economist at Texas Tech University and director of the International Center for Agricultural Competitiveness. We've got Jim Gilliland from Gilliland and McKinney coming up next.
Hey, AgriTalk listeners, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio today. That's profarmer.com/radio.
Everybody's going west this May 9th and 10th. Join the Packer and the nation's who's who in the produce industry for another exciting and informative West Coast Produce Expo in Palm Desert, California. Mix and mingle in a professional yet casual atmosphere. Listen and learn from the best. Your travel partners will enlighten you, and your destinations will be as beautiful as they are educational. All signs point to your success at this year's West Coast Produce Expo, but you won't know unless you go. Register now at westcoastproduceexpo.com.
The premier Farm Journal Hemp College is coming to Lexington, Kentucky on June 19th. This one-day farmer-focused event will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, legal considerations, and policy news. Interact with growers and industry experts to gather answers to all your questions. Register for Farm Journal Hemp College at regonline.com/hempcollege.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This two DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
The mighty Prosaro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield, the hammer of head and leaf diseases, the number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quality and higher yield, use Prosaro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosaro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
Oh, hey, bro. I'm an off-brand tractor filter. You know, the one they're practically giving away at the farm store. So, a lot of people choose me to filter their precious oil, fuel, or air, but I don't work as hard as your tractor's OEM filter. I am under-engineered and made from cheaper components, so dust and contaminants, they're your problem, brah.
Off-brand filters are not John Deere filters. OEM filters are engineered for maximum performance in your John Deere machine. Don't risk it with anything less.
Central Life Sciences reminds you to get control of flies on your swine operation with Clarifly Larvicide and Starbar products. Clarifly Larvicide prevents the emergence of nuisance flies from animal manure by as much as 96%, and Starbar features a lineup of baits, traps, and sprays that tackle your fly problem. Flies spread disease, impact your neighbors, and interfere with swine weight gain. Visit centralflycontrol.com. That's three words, centralflycontrol.com.
The premier Farm Journal Hemp College is coming to Lexington, Kentucky on June 19th. This one-day farmer-focused event will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, legal considerations, and policy news. Interact with growers and industry experts to gather answers to all your questions. Register for Farm Journal Hemp College at regonline.com/hempcollege.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on AgWeb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture is what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, farmer-focused podcast. It's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts and is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. It is a moving target trying to figure out exactly what is going on, not only in the markets, but with China and the U.S. on the trade talks. Mm-hmm. Let's bring in John Gilliland, Gilliland and McKinney International Counselors right now. John, thank you so much for coming back on AgriTalk. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Great to be back with you. How are you?
Good, good. So right now the Dow is off almost 400 points. That to me is the equity market saying, everything isn't quite right with this. But in the commodity world, we've got a little bit of strength going in corn and soybeans and even wheat. Cattle are trying this morning. Hogs, not so much. But the commodity world seems to be saying, continue to touch the brakes on progress here between the U.S. and China on these trade talks. What is the latest? Where do we stand, John?
Well, as you and your listeners might have already been discussing, we did take a step back in negotiations over the weekend. China appears to be walking back a little bit on some of the commitments that they had apparently made to U.S. negotiators. And in response to that, President Trump announced that the U.S. is going to proceed with raising tariffs on Chinese goods as of this Friday. But I think what you're seeing in the markets, and I think what you're, the way a lot of people are trying to look at this is just, one more turn in the longer negotiation. I think the last time I was on with you, I described us as being really closer, still at the beginning of a longer process rather than towards the end. And this is an illustration of what I was describing.
Yeah. John, so why, if you're saying that we're still in the early stages of a longer term process, why is it being described as we're almost to the end zone with China?
Well, for a couple of reasons. There's been much anticipation about getting to some sort of agreement with each other on what the U.S. wants out of China, what China is willing to do to change its industrial policies so that we can start ratcheting back or turning down the tariff war that we have. And so when they say we're towards, we're in the end game, they're talking about that agreement. But that agreement is just going to consist of really a framework of commitments that China is going to make and provide a roadmap for how the U.S. will undo its tariffs and a roadmap for how China will treat our goods. But this longer road consists of all that comes after that, China following through on its commitments, what the United States might do in the event that China fails to come through on its commitments. And that's the road that will unfold over a longer period of time.
Okay, so John, let's say that the vice premier does show up in Washington, D.C. later this week. The talks go well. Do we still see a ratcheting up of the tariffs on Friday?
Well, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin said that, if they see renewed progress out of China, they would reconsider imposing the higher tariff. So that's clearly on the table. What China has to show, of course, is going to have to be something they discuss.
Okay. How is this going to play out over the next month?
Well, I think that the talks will continue just as they were scheduled. The Chinese visit this week was scheduled. It was expected. Yep. So I don't think that we ought to look at what has happened the last few days as something that necessarily diverts us from that negotiating path. They will continue to talk. There is still the possibility that the heads of state will meet. There was an expectation as we reached the stage of some sort of agreement that Trump and Xi would meet perhaps in early June. If they're able to get back on a path of progress, there's no reason to think that agreement and a summit meeting can't still take place. But obviously, there's higher anxiety and there's more uncertainty over whether that can happen based on where things stand now.
Okay. All right. Now, I do want to look back for just a moment. What caused China to take a step back and to pull back on some of what we thought we had negotiated?
Well, there are a couple of schools of thought. I mean, on the one hand, your old China experts would say this is classic Chinese negotiating strategy. you know, that to come in, to be in a room with you, listen to your demands, agree with you that changes need to be made, perhaps provide some indication that they're willing to make some changes, and then to go back, wait a little while, and then to appear to change their mind or to move the goalposts. I mean, that's just a negotiating strategy. So to some extent, a lot of us have been expecting this back and forth. But the other thinking is that, you know, President Xi may, and China may himself have made commitments that are becoming increasingly difficult for him to defend back home.
Yeah.
That the hawks in his government,
yes,
are pushing him, and in order to save face, he's got to be a little tougher with the United States as well.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's where we're at with it right now. And we need to find a way for President Xi to sign that agreement, right? That's what we really need to find now.
Well, that's certainly the goal, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, John, we're out of time here. I appreciate you making the time for us again this morning. We'll be in contact when the issue is developing further, and try to get you back on here as we get closer, okay?
Absolutely. Happy to do that.
Good. Thank you, John. That is John Gilliland and McKinney, International Counselors. Davis.
Well, there you go.
John has not wavered, mm-hmm, in his contention that we are still in the early stages of this relationship development, the new world relationship development with China.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Boy. That he highlighted and didn't use the word that we've used, gamesmanship.
Yeah.
You know, the Chinese know what they're doing. This is not their first rodeo. We got to keep that in mind.
No, and it is, trade with China is going to be an issue that we're talking about long into the future. All right. Thank you so much to John. Thanks to Mike Steenhook and to Darren Hudson for coming on. Come back this afternoon. We got Tommy Grisafi from Advanced Trade.
We're joined today by Joan Ruskamp, past chairman of the Cattlemen's Beef Board, to talk about what your dollar does to promote demand for beef. Joan, what's new with the beef checkoff?
Thanks for having me on. According to our most recent producer survey, 80% of producers today say the checkoff drives demand for beef. So I'd like to share some of the ways we're doing that. One example is foreign marketing. We're exporting about $8 billion worth of beef overseas. That's huge, especially considering how we've opened up markets in Asia, creating value for producers around $320 per head slaughtered. Additionally, the checkoff has helped boost retail meat case sales to a 6-year high, with strong demand expected to continue through 2019. We also launched a campaign to showcase real ways the checkoff is using producer dollars to drive demand. It's called Your Dollar Does. You can learn more and sign up for the newsletter at drivingdemandforbeef.com.
That's great, Joan. Thanks for joining us from the Cattlemen's Beef Board. To learn more, go to drivingdemandforbeef.com, funded by the Beef Checkoff.